Hello and welcome back to another episode of Our Stories and Conversations on Mental Health. I am back with Dylan, who in the last episode was talking about his alcoholic addiction. Did you want to give a quick recap on what we spoke about in the last episode in case people were just tuned in?
Yeah. I just spoke about my history and, you know, I spent 13 years in addiction, pretty hopeless for a long time. Just spoke about my journey, how I went from hopeless to hopeful and how I ended up here. 13 years of addiction, almost 2 years sober.
So it's 13 years of drinking.
13 years.
Alcohol addiction. Yeah. So we ended the last episode where you were saying that you were told that, hey, you need to go to recovery.
Yeah.
To fight this problem or else you'll end up on the streets.
Yeah.
So explain to us where did you go to for your recovery process?
So I went to an organization called Odyssey House. So it's a really, really intensive, like, in-resident rehab. I'm actually still there, but really full-on. It's, I want to say this, like, I don't want to scare people away from doing this process, but I also kind of want to be a little bit realistic here and well. It's a lot of work, but it's not easy.
So what's the process? So does a psychiatrist need to see you to see if you qualify? Because I know there's a lot of institutions where they check how you are, if you're really qualified.
Yeah. So they already, like, I kind of had an AOD worker. So the process was, like, before, like, quite a few years prior I went to Odyssey, I was in another rehab. And I was only in there for a month, and it was a private one, and private ones aren't great. I'm not saying that they don't help people. They absolutely do.
Do you know what the difference between a public and private would be?
What do you mean? It depends. It's dependent on the care that they offer.
Okay.
I kind of saw the private as more of a revolving door, and the public, the one at Odyssey House, actually sat down and worked with your issues continuously. Because, like, 28 days and then back out to the real world. And if you've got a light, like an addict, generally, like, I would say from my experience, I'm not basing off stats or anything like here, is that I would say that most addicts have a lot of trauma. And 28 days isn't enough to go through everything, work through what you have to, and then...
So this is what the private institutes do?
Few CBD tools, saw a psychiatrist, put you on anti-craving medication, all this sort of thing, all things that are good, but they're not kind of like band-aids to a much, much bigger problem. Like, you kind of really need to sit down and knuckle down what is happening.
Yeah.
Start going through the healing process. But,
Okay, so you've been accepted into Odyssey House. What's... like, take us through the process of what happens.
So it's quite weird in the regard. It's like a functional based rehab. So it's like a little community in a bubble, and you have level sets. So you as you escalate through the program, you go up levels. And what that means is you get more responsibility in the house, and the later levels, you actually end up running the house yourself. But it's all about putting you in, like, a work environment, and then making, like, bringing out stressor within you, and then teaching you how to deal with that stress, ultimately. And then sometimes it's like they have this really weird system, and it's called a communique. It's like, I have a problem with someone, or something's played out, and you write this thing that says what happened, how I felt, and what you would like. And then you run it in this group space and you have a conversation. And one of the real big emphases in the program is actually communication. And it's like how to communicate properly, because a lot of people don't. It's actually kind of insane. Like, even people out in the real world don't know how to properly communicate, and this program really, really focuses on teaching you how to communicate. And it's like, stop, like, negative emotions building up, like resentment and, you know, anger, frustration, and teaches you how to handle and communicate properly. But then it also teaches you that sometimes the things that you do is just not okay. But then teaches you how to handle, oh, you know, when you did this, you were a dick, and, you know, I would like that you don't do that, or whatever. And then someone is forced to sit there and listen to it. And it sounds extreme, but you're forced to sit there and listen to it and then hear the feedback. And then you have the choice to actively change and go, okay, I don't want to annoy these people anymore. And then you ultimately end up throughout the program, and it happens quite a lot. Like, you get communicate all the time, and then eventually you listen to people, give your feedback, you can communicate with people properly, and it's kind of insane.
But yeah, so you're saying 13 years of drinking heavily. When you go in there, how does it work as in the medical? Because 13 years of drinking and you just stopped suddenly.
Okay, so I went to detox.
Okay.
Everyone, before they go into a rehab like this, you have to go into detox. Some rehabs have a detox in them themselves, and you're detoxing in the rehab, which was part of, like, what happened in my first rehab. It was 28 days you were detoxing, and then...
Did they give you anything?
Yeah. They give you medication.
Yeah.
There's like, for example, for me, like, I'm an epileptic and alcoholic, so... Yeah, detoxing stage, if you know anything about...
To be honest.
Alcohol withdrawal...
It's awfully different.
So when you're withdrawing from alcohol specifically, you go into something called DTs, which is delirium tremors. Basically means severe withdrawals. And alcohol is one of the only substances that you can die from when you withdraw. Like, I think there are other ones now, but alcohol is pretty bad. And you need to... go through a like safe withdrawal process, and it's usually with benzos and whatever, and it needs to be monitored, and it's usually over a week or 2 weeks, depending on how bad it was. And then once you've done that, then you go into the rehab.
Okay, so you're going in there. Obviously, do you share a room with someone?
Yeah.
And are they the same addiction as you? Or
No. Well, no, it's addiction? Not. You just put into a room with someone, generally of a higher level. So when you get into the program, there's foundation. So there's four levels in the program. There's foundations, level one, level two, level three, and levers. And I'm in levers. But what happens is you're a foundee and you'll usually be put in someone with level one or above. And the idea is you get put into a room, and this person is meant to like teach you how to look after your room, because the rules in the house are extremely strict.
What can you go
like over? For example, you have to have your shoes neatly put up to the wall. And if they're not touching the wall, then you get something called hours. And hours is like an interesting sort of thing. It's like if you make a mistake or stuff up, you get hours and you have to work them off. So it's like,
what do you do to work them off?
There's like stuff around the house. So like whether it's making dinner or lunch on the weekends or...
Is it the same as like if you fold your... You don't make your bed?
Yeah. There's a list
like
of stuff.
Army stuff.
Yeah. There's been people who came from military backgrounds who said it was harder, like more strict.
Shoes? Why is shoes up against the walls?
It's about getting you into routine. So when you get up, that you make your bed, you ensure that everything is clean, that you are checking everything.
My OCD would love this place.
Yeah. And a lot of, like... And then it also pushes that, like, when people... you know, stuff up, they get hours and they get really frustrated, and then they like have to learn how to deal with like something that I don't agree with.
Yeah. How many hours did you get? Did you get a lot of hours?
I got the most probably out of every single person in the program, but that's because I had undiagnosed ADHD.
Yeah.
I only got diagnosed with ADHD when I was in the program. I'm inattentive. So that means I was just standing there daydreaming and looking at walls, and yeah, until they kind of noticed later in the program. But, like, I would forget, like, for example, when you leave the house, you have to sign in, sign out. And if you don't sign in, sign out, then you get hours.
Can you leave the house in foundations?
No. You can only leave the house in levers.
What are you allowed to do in level one foundations? Like, what? Obviously, you got to do things to keep yourself sane. Go shoot, play some basketball. Or
yeah, there's basketball courts and all that there.
But you're not allowed outside the...
No, you're only allowed on
level four levers.
No, yeah. When you get to levers, then you can. Yeah.
So then, as a person that when you were in foundation, what did you do to keep yourself occupied?
Sleep.
Just sleep.
Yeah, just slept. I was. So
and they don't. They're not. They weren't hard on the sleeping.
I had a few people comment on it, but like, yeah, when you're in foundations, like the foundation period, which is only a month, is you really settling into the program.
Yeah.
And like, if you've been in addiction for a really, really long time, like your body takes time to adjust.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, but yeah, when I was in that period, I was just really, really tired. Like really, really, really tired. I'm not sleeping a lot. And then level one starts after a month, and that's when you start actually doing work in the program, and that's where the stress starts to build up, and then people have to manage conflicts. And
so what did level one, so what did you have to do on that one?
So level one, it's just starts. You start doing roles, like responsibilities around
cleaning
the house.
Cleaning and...
No, yeah. I mean, you...
Like, did you have to sweep the hallways of the main, or did they have cleaners?
You're doing that stuff in foundations, but, like, there's level one specific responsibilities.
Like cooking?
No. That's a job function. So there's an there's so much information.
So the job function means get paid?
No. So when you get into the program, you're allocated a job function. So I'll go into this.
What was your... Okay, go into it.
So when you first get there, there's two job functions you go into. It's PDM or PMC, which is... one's permaculture, which is like gardening, and the other one's property development and maintenance, which is maintaining stuff on the property, like fixing doors, all that sort of stuff. Not tradie stuff, obviously, but they get tradies to do.
So like gardening and that? And
Yeah. But also small maintenance stuff around the house. Like sometimes it's sanding tables, fixing a bench, small stuff. And then when you get to from foundies to level one, you may change job function, and that may go into like the children's center. The kitchen. Like the children's center is like, because the rehab that I'm at has a lot of families. There's a lot of family focus, and people who are in recovery can go there with their children. It's about like, reunifying them and then getting them trying back into normality. And then there's also the kitchen job, which, you know, people are preparing the meals for the day and all that sort of thing. But then there's also BO, which I was in a lot, which is the business office, which is just like admin stuff.
So you did the admin of Odyssey House?
No, not all of it. No. We're not paying bills and shit. It was just small stuff, like organizing like a little bit of the paperwork around the house, organizing mail.
That's full on.
Yeah, the program like pushes you into a position where you have to start functioning normally.
It's like its own world inside.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bubble.
Yeah.
And then the house is designed that the further you go up, the more responsibility you get. Like in level three, you're running the house. Like you're in charge of it. So you work with staff to run the house. So like...
But what about like, do you pay for accommodation there? Or it's because it's public, it's all
it's Medicare? No, it's Medicare.
Okay.
Yeah, so... like Centrelink, I think. So a really cool thing that they actually do in it is they take 80% of your Centrelink and then they keep 20% of it in a trust. So when you get to the last stage leavers, they actually give all the money that they've accumulated on the side back to you. So I had a little bit of money when I got to leavers saved there that I could do a few things. And like a lot of my peers end up buying cars and all that. And when they get a job, so they have enough money they save off enough money to buy a car in the program. And then when they get to leavers, they buy a car and then get a job.
So leavers is when you can get a job.
Yep. And study.
Yeah. Okay. So level two.
Level two is like, it's the first senior level. So it's about 4 months into the program. And you start assisting running the house.
And was it level two that you take on people in foundation? Or was that level one?
What do you mean take? No.
Where you shared the room with...
No. You're sharing rooms with people your whole program.
Okay.
You're sharing with people your whole program from foundations onwards.
They separate males and females?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I assume males and females can't date there?
Oh, absolutely. No. It's, they call it an exclusive relationship. It's mainly because if you're focusing on someone else, you're not focusing on yourself, you're not dealing with your own problems. But also it can be a really common trauma response, like people try and find someone else and to try and fill the void, and lots of reasons. There's a lot in that, but like when you're really early on and you're still trying to work on yourself, it's like the worst thing. Like, because you can't work on yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've seen a lot of people get into relationships and then especially start developing a relationship in the program, and then they leave together, and then very quickly they're back into that cycle because they haven't broken out of the cycle, learnt who they are, deal with their trauma, and then move onward. They've kind of had someone intervene with them on the way.
So what else did you do on level two? So you were...
So level two is like the eighth assistant, like you assist running the house. So you just support the threes, and it's just like you start doing these things called shadows, which is the level threes organizes like drives and all these things. So like people have to go to court, they have to go to doctors, they have to do family things, whatever. The threes organize that. So they organize who's going to drive them, what time, all this sort of thing. But when they're going out of the house, like if a lower level resident is going to someone, they have to have a shadow, and that's when level twos kind of support them. It's just to make sure that someone, when they're out there, that they're responsible.
Mm.
And a lot of people can feel really like they're really watched over, and they're not wrong. Like it is absolutely like that. Mm. But it's like, you're so vulnerable really early on. It's insane. Mm. Yeah. And you can make like, sometimes it's just when you're really, really, really early on in recovery, like that small opportunity can just overwhelm you,
mm.
and then you'll take it. You know, you're walking past the bottle and, oh, yeah, cool, I can just rack one, and then bang, and then you're back into it, and then the cycle starts again.
So that's why you got the shadower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then level three is...
Level three is running the house. So
then what's level four is just holiday mode?
No, level four is leavers. Level four is the reintegration.
Let's go back to level three. So you're running the house. You're giving everyone jobs.
Yeah. People claim it to be a cult.
That's what I was saying. I was going to use that word.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, it's funny. Like, we make jokes about it all the time. Yeah. It's insane. It's just... and it can...
You got everyone doing all the work and not paying them.
Yeah. Well, the government's paying them. But...
Oh, that's true.
So,
but it's good because you're obviously teaching people responsibilities.
Yeah.
And how to run things so when they get out, they're confident in themselves of...
Self-esteem.
Yeah.
Self-esteem is a huge, huge thing.
Yeah.
And then, a really cool thing that the house does is it gives, the threes are part of, deciding who gets what job or whatever.
Mm.
And you can kind of go, okay, this person doesn't have a voice or they're really quiet, and you can advocate for them getting, a leadership role in the house. And you can actively start watching people who had no voice, literally couldn't talk at all, and then they slowly start building their confidence up, and then they get pushed to another level, and you push it up a little more, and it's gradually building someone up. And it's really cool. Like you see people come into the house that can't talk to anyone, and then by the end of it, they're part of running a massive community.
Mm.
Like the growth is insane when people really commit, but then people get there and they don't want to commit, and they don't agree with the program, but which is fine. Yeah.
And then level four is just leavers, so you're getting ready to leave the place.
Yeah. So you it's the reintegration stage. It's you've gotten to this level now, and it's you can work out what you want to do. You get a job, you start studying, you move out with some peers if you want, or... Yeah. And then you graduate. Graduation's a massive thing.
Do they give you anything for graduation?
You get a certificate
and all that. So you completed the program.
Yeah, it's got a really low graduation rate.
Yeah.
This program does.
Yeah.
Because of how intense it is. Like, not many people push to the end. But if you, you have a choice. It's recovery is either easy for you or really hard. Mm. You're not going to get it. You're not going to get anywhere if you go the easy way. If you go through the path of least resistant every single time, you're going to go back to the same habits.
Yeah.
Because you have to change a lot. Like a lot. If you got a really severe addiction, you have to change a lot. And this sort of program forces you to start working on yourself and learn how to deal with that. And then, you know.
What was your biggest challenge in that house?
Oh, my biggest challenge was when I diagnosed ADHD.
Yeah.
I had to really learn, because I make a lot of mistakes. I'm really, 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 really forgetful. And a lot of people take that as carelessness.
Mm.
But it's not me being careless. It's me just not managing properly. But it taught me a really cool lesson. That sometimes that people aren't going to be aware or understand neurodivergence, but I can learn how to handle it. So throughout my program, I got a lot of criticism and really attacked. It's like, Dylan, you need to do this. You need to handle this better. You need to do blah, 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 blah. And then I got the diagnosis. And by that time that I got the diagnosis, I knew how to handle the situation. I was like, okay, cool. Sweet. Now I can explain to people, and even when people know that you have it, they still don't understand it.
Mm.
The only thing that I can change is my reaction. I know I'm going to continuously making mistakes. Like, it's ADHD. I can't stop it.
Yeah.
But I can change the way that I handle it.
And yeah.
That's, you know, not getting as stressed, or learning how to not get as stressed, probably is a better way to put it. And ultimately handle it better. And it's ultimately putting it what's in my control.
So you said how much was it, 14 months you've been now there, or?
23, 24.
Oh, so nearly 2 years. Yeah. So when you leave, or even now, because I actually go to uni. We met at uni. We're in the same class. so I know a couple of students are always like, oh, let's go for drinks and that. What's your mind state with that? Like, obviously, you don't want to go into any bars, pubs at the moment.
No, not at this point.
And will that be something you never want to go in to, or do you eventually want to?
I don't know.
Be able to go in there.
To be perfectly honest, I don't know. At this point in time, it's not good.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of really strong opinions on this sort of stuff, especially in recovery. Like, I don't really have a desire to drink, but it's not like I don't want to put myself in harm's way. Maybe in the future I might, but that would be, if I was to do that, I would be around people who understand my situation.
Yeah.
Meaning that they know that I can't, and they know that it's like life or death with me if I pick up a drink.
What about if I was just sitting here drinking a beer, there's no temptations? Would you say, Matt, can you not drink in front of me?
Beer specifically is one of my biggest triggers, because I don't have any bad memories with beer. Like a lot of my other drinks I do, but beer, yeah, specifically, I actually can get thirsty, and that's the thing that I have to worry about. But like I don't get stressed when people are drinking, but I will avoid people being around people that are drinking. Like, it's not something that I want to be around. But then, like, you know, like when I go to family functions, people are going to drink. Like, yeah. I can't avoid it. But you know, we're in Australia. We've got a huge drinking culture. Like,
yeah.
Like I walk past a bar, or I mean, not a bar, Bottle-O, like everywhere. I have to. The interesting thing with alcohol, it's unlike drugs, is you have to learn for it to be there. Like, it's so, like when I get out in the real world, I can order alcohol to my house. There's no escape, so I kind of have to.
So you, for the rest of your life, will never have an alcoholic beverage? You can never have one?
No. Not, I don't like to use the word never. And specifically, I don't like to use the word never is because I understand that relapses are actually a part of the process. And if you tell yourself things like never, you set yourself up for failure when you do, and then it creates all this shame and guilt when you do. You're like, oh my God, I said I was never going to do this again, and then I do this again, and then you create this cycle where you just go straight down. I'm trying to set it up is if I do, it's about how quickly I get back up. You know?
Because our culture, like you're saying, like our culture is like on a Friday night, Saturday night, everyone goes to a pub, has a nice pub meal, nice beer.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, it would be.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I wish I could go back to drinking.
And you can never touch a non-alcoholic drink?
No, I don't want to touch a non-alcoholic. No. It just reminds me too much of alcohol.
So as in, if you would drink a non-alcoholic drink, all the memories that you had when you were drinking, so it's pretty much the same.
It just reminds you, yeah. It's like, it smells the same, it, all that sort of thing. So I'd avoid it, yeah.
And what about, like, when you drink soft drink? Like, you're saying you drink bourbon, did you just drink it straight, or did you mix it?
I did mix it.
So, like, taste of Coke or soft drink?
No, tastes completely different.
Yeah.
Like, I had my drink strong.
Yeah.
And that's not something you should be bragging about. But like, yeah, no, I actually really enjoy soft drink now, and it's something that I used to hate, and, not hate, that's not the right word, but yeah, no, I really, like, I enjoy my soft drinks now.
You enjoy your V's as well?
Yeah, I love my V's.
Yeah, I know that firsthand.
Yeah, yeah.
The good thing about Dylan here, he actually has a good sense of humor when it comes to his addiction. Like, a couple guys would joke around about, oh, I got shit faced on the weekend, and he would turn around and be like, you know, what do you call shit-faced? And then, come on, that's nothing compared to me. Like, it's good to see that you can joke about it, have a laugh about it. I think that also helps with the recovery. I could be wrong. I'm not too sure, but...
Yeah. I see the humor in everything, but my humor is also a response to a lot of the trauma that I received. It was, like, my way to handle shit.
Mm.
But, my humor back in the day used to be self-deprecating. So I used to attack myself to defend myself. But now it's, I like to make it lighthearted. I like to, yeah.
So when do you plan to, when you're going to leave the Odyssey house or?
So hopefully in the next 3 months, me and some peers are going to start moving out.
Yep. Together.
Yep. And then after that, I'm not sure. It depends how I go when I'm out in the real world and how long I'll graduate.
Oh, you'll be with your peers who won't be... Are they alcoholic? Alcohol?
Different issues.
Different issues. So then if they've got different issues, would they drink?
No. I know one of them won't ever drink again, but I think... We're going to have rules at this house, and one of the rules is nothing like that there.
No alcohol, no cannabis, no nothing in the house.
Yeah.
Nothing that can lead to a relapse.
Yeah. And I think it's, especially for all of us, it's just fair that we have these rules, and we're going to have some pretty strict rules, like...
Shoes up against the wall?
No. I'm talking like you start using or drinking, you're out sort of thing, and it has to be that brutal. And one of the things that happens with addicts... is that, like, one falls... Like, misery loves company is the saying. And it's like, one person falls over and then they bring a lot of other people with them. Domino effect. Like, the previous group on top of us, like, a few of them fell over and then they took the rest of them with them.
Yeah.
And if you don't have, like, a relationship where you can challenge people on their BS, you'll go down with them. Yeah. And you have to have, like, a really... And it sounds, like, almost unempathetic, but...
Mm.
In recovery, you have to be relentlessly selfish.
Yeah.
You have to make decisions that will save yourself. Yeah. Because if you don't, like, choose yourself above everything else, then you won't have anything else. Because you'll go back to drinking or using or whatever. And it's kind of hard because you see, like, a lot of people, like, they prioritize their family, their friends, their career and all that sort of stuff before their recovery.
Mm.
And they always fall over. It's you put yourself first so that everything else doesn't pull over. Because if you don't, if you lose yourself, then you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can give any person out there that has an addiction any advice, what would it be?
Advice. Just understanding it's a journey, I think.
Yeah.
It's steps. And... Be careful, like, and I like, one of my things is be careful of your ego in your recovery. And it's like, what does ego have to do with recovery? Is your ego convinces you that you're okay. And I see a lot of people put themselves in dangerous positions because of it, because they turn around and go, after a little while, they're like, this is getting stressful, I can't handle this anymore. And then they put themselves out in the real world and they haven't dealt with their issues. Yeah, really understand that your mind can really play tricks on you and, yeah, put you in really bad positions.
Mm.
And I see that happen all the time. I see people justify it the same way and it's like, oh, yeah, I'll be okay. And just because that other person's done it, and it's like, you know, 99% of people who leave the place early and haven't really dealt with their issues tend to go back because they're leaving for the wrong reasons. They're not leaving because, hey, I can handle this and I think I'm ready. They're leaving because I don't like this place and this I can't handle these emotions.
Mm.
And then they convince themselves it's not that. And then, yeah. Ego is like, yeah.
Major one.
Yeah.
So can you leave whenever you want or?
Yeah. You can, like,
so if you're in foundations, you can say, I'm done.
Yeah, you can leave the program whenever you want. It's not like you're not forced to be there.
Yeah, no, like, it's making it sound like it's the army.
Some people are on bail. Like, some people are on bail there and they have to be there, but they've got, like, criminal sort of background.
Yeah, it's part of their parole. Yeah,
but, if they're voluntary, you can leave there anytime you want. Like, anytime you want.
What's the most messed up thing you've seen there?
I can't get into that. I'm not going to go into details of the house, like the actual house. But yeah, there's some pretty write-off stuff that you see there. Like, you've got people early in recovery who are going into psychosis, that sort of thing, which is normal. Like, you know, like, you're getting off drugs, you've been off drugs for a really, really long time. Your brain, I think it's called, like, post-acute withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, your brain still, like, yeah. Because it takes a long time for your brain to really balance up after you've been abusing stuff for a long time. And then that's, learning to adjust, but yeah. Yeah, but I'm not gonna go into the fine. I can't really, that's why I'm avoiding talking about people or things, because it's like, there's a confidentiality.
Yeah, 100%.
Sort of thing. I'm happy to talk about myself and my experiences and what I've dealt with and all that. That's fine, but yeah.
Was there anything else you wanted to add on that you feel we didn't cover?
Everyone's recovery is different. Not everyone's is the same, and this is something that be careful of people who tell you there's only one way to do it. It's so fucking dangerous. I went to AA a long time ago, and I got told by some people there that the only solution is AA. I'm pretty sure it says it in the book. And I'm not saying that AA doesn't help people. It absolutely does, but it's not for everyone. And there are other solutions, and you just have to keep looking for solutions that suit you. Different programs, different people, different doctors, different psychologists, different counselors, whatever. You know, different recovery-based groups, you know. There's not just AA. There's Shark, there's Smart, there's different organizations, and you just have to keep looking and reaching out. Like, yeah, it's not a one size fits all. It's not, you know, everyone's journey is different. Everyone has different things they have to work on, but just keep looking for something until you find it. And just because something doesn't work doesn't mean something else won't.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's all about trial and error. It's like, I've seen so many psychologists in my life, and it isn't until the one that I'm with now that is really helping. You know what I mean? And I was always giving up because it's like, I'm not going to bother with another psychologist because it's not helping me.
I don't feel like
I'm getting help. But then when you don't cancel it out, that just because you had one or two bad experiences with this psychologist or this A&A program or this and that, doesn't mean that all the other solutions are not.
Yeah. And be careful. I have personal experience because that person who told me that they were the only solution really me up, because AI wasn't working for me, because it's not even that I'm not spiritual. I've actually gone through kind of like a spiritual process in this, and I've learned a lot about myself. But it's the forcing of an idea and ideologies onto you may not necessarily work, but it could, like, absolutely can. Sometimes it is what people need. Sometimes they need to try a lot of different things, go back, whatever. It's like everyone's process is different, but yeah.
You say spiritual, and just going back to Odyssey House, do they have like a church there?
It is in a church.
It's in a church.
It's at an old monastery, but it doesn't actually focus on anything spiritual. No. Like the facility that I'm at, it's like an old.
Not scary. The rooms aren't like.
Oh, you see some. No. You see some stuff from now. No. No, the scariest thing about the place is the residents.
like, say, if you're a religious person, there's no... Because they obviously have psychologists, psychiatrists and all that there on the...
Yeah. Well, they have psychologists in the program, and they do, like, a whole process around that. But, like, they're they have clinicians, like AOD clinicians and all that, and they're level-based clinicians and stuff.
And is it just one Odyssey House? It's not...
No, it's Victoria. So Odyssey is like an old, based off an old model called a TC, it's therapeutic community. And Odyssey is based off an American program. It started in the US and then it came over here and then it's broken off into branches. There's like Odyssey House New South Wales, Odyssey House Victoria, and they're different now. They used to be under one name, but it's one name now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's a TC, which is the therapeutic community, which is the... I probably should have mentioned that actually at the start, but anyway, that's
not right. Covering it now.
It's a type of therapy, basically. Yeah. And Odyssey isn't the only place that does it. There's definitely a lot of other ones. There's a lot of people who don't like it, but like the model, because it can be really direct, and it can feel like it's not empathetic, but it's actually it's almost like not brutal truth. It's saying the hard things to someone so you can help them. I found like a lot of places they don't say the hard things, and they don't say what you're doing is going to really hurt you yourself, or what you're doing is really bad, and how you're impacting yourself and other people and all this. This place really focuses on, like, you need to call people out. Like, because, like, time and time again, like, you know, you know, if a mate's doing something stupid and you don't say something to them because you don't want to hurt their feelings, it could be the last time you see them. You know, like, you have to be prepared to say that, like, the hard stuff. Yeah, like, if you notice something playing out, you notice small behaviors, you notice that they're being distant, whatever, and you don't say anything and you hold back. And this place really teaches you to go, like, if you notice something, say it.
Full on. I don't think I would last.
Yeah. A lot of people don't. But it doesn't mean that people don't gain. Like, it's a journey.
It's a journey.
Like, people go there, and then quite a lot of people come back.
Mm.
Like, a lot of people go into the program and then go, nope, this isn't for me, and then come back. It's part of their journey.
Well, thank you for sharing your journey, cool. Dylan. Really appreciate it, man. Like, very open, very honest. People that are out there that have addictions, you know, please do seek help. Try maybe Odyssey House, like Dylan's saying, you never know.
Yeah. Whatever organization, there's, depending on where you are, what you're going through, there's different things. Like, even just Google searches, like finding, like going to your GP that can potentially link you to an AOD clinician, or depending where you are. But like, start by looking.
And just don't stop looking.
Yeah. There's a lot of like, there's great TikTokers and like, there's great communities that, you know, like,
there's great podcasters.
Yeah. Great podcasts as well. I haven't heard of them, but like, Yeah, just keep looking for resources, and there's a lot out there. And if you can't find anything, AA still, or NA, if that's your thing, it's still good things to start with, because you're meeting people who are in the community, and they can give you some really, really amazing advice and things to do. And yeah.
Oh, unless you got anything else that?
No.
Well, there you go. If you have any questions for Dylan, drop them down in the comment section below. We will get him back in here and answer them. Dylan will be appearing on the show again. I'm confident about it, just as long as his bus ride isn't an hour and a half.
No, it's all, I can't,
But, hopefully we can get him back on, because he is a very insightful person. In class, he's pretty switched on. As you can see, he uses all those big words. I have to tell him to just... Tweak him down a bit for me sometimes.
I don't even think I'm using big words, but anyway.
No, we'll definitely get him in again. Thank you for... Yeah, you got anything else to say?
No, that's all. That's it.
Well, thanks for watching, everyone. We truly appreciate it. If you're listening through a streaming service like Amazon Music or Spotify, hit that follow button. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. And again, write in any questions that you have for Dylan. Thanks for coming in, mate.
Cool, too easy.
Easy as. And we'll see you soon with another episode. See ya.